Morning, and welcome to our Blog Talk Radio Show with Dr. Sheldon Fellman, Vivian Milstein Associate Professor of Clinical Surgery in the Clinical Breast Cancer Program. I'm Deborah Schwarz, and today we are going to be continuing with the second episode of a three-part Blog Talk Radio series on what you need to know about breast cancer. Our first program covered questions on prevention and family history. If you were unable to attend, be certain to listen to our archived version found on our Columbia Surgery Blog Talk radio station. Now, during our second program, we will discuss what you need to know if you're diagnosed with early stage breast cancer. This will include the needle or the knife question, or the importance of considering a biopsy before having surgery. Lastly, in our third program to be held on September 5th, we will cover what you need to know if you are diagnosed with advanced stage breast cancer. Before we start, I would like to cover a couple of housekeeping issues. First of all, we are taking questions live today. Listeners can call in to 347-539-5189. Again, please call in to 347-539-5189. Also, today we are live tweeting with the hashtag pound CUMEDCHAT. That's pound CUMEDCHAT. So if you would like to ask a question on Twitter, mention at Columbia Surgery and use the hashtag pound CUMEDCHAT. We will try to answer as many questions as we can within the next 30 minutes. However, if you have submitted a question that we are unable to get to, we will follow up with you through email. Welcome, Dr. Fellman. We're so glad to have you as part of our series today.
Thank you, Deborah. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, and it's my pleasure to speak to you today and to answer questions about early-stage breast cancer, how it's diagnosed and how it's treated. And we're fortunate that a large percentage of our patients nowadays are diagnosed with early stage breast cancer because of increasing screening. This obviously is good news, although for women diagnosed with this disease, it's very disturbing, but our options for treatment are many, and our philosophy of really trying to minimize the approach surgically and improve the cosmetic appearance of the breast and maintain normal function really is overarching in terms of our entire program. So I'm pleased to be here with you, and I'm ready to answer questions.
Fabulous. Thanks so much. So our first question is from Stella. She says, I was diagnosed on June 7th, 2012, with ADH and ALH following a core needle biopsy. Is there any increased risk or other significance in having these coexisting diagnoses? An excisional biopsy was recommended, but my preferred surgeon has no availability until September. Is it okay to wait until then? For background, I'm 42, and a small area of calcification was found on my second annual mammogram. My mother had bilateral breast cancer at 45 and 48, and my maternal grandmother had breast cancer at the age of 53.
Thank you, Stella. This is a very important question. So just to clarify for the listeners, most patients with ADH and ALH are actually diagnosed with these conditions based upon a mammogram, which demonstrates what we call microcalcifications in the breast. And this could be a clue to the radiologist that there can be an early issue. So what these terms mean, the A is atypia, so it's atypical ductal hyperplasia and atypical lobular hyperplasia. These are not cancer, but they are risk factors for developing breast cancer. And we know that women who are diagnosed with these conditions based upon a needle biopsy, have about a 10 or 15% chance of having associated underlying breast cancer. Almost always in that situation, it is a very early breast cancer. So in terms of waiting to have the surgical excisional biopsy done, it's probably better to do it sooner because there is a small risk that there can be breast cancer, and there are many qualified breast surgeons who can take care of this problem. Now, in terms of your background, it does raise some concerns in that you have a significant family history of breast cancer, particularly with your mother having had bilateral breast cancer. It means that the likelihood that your mother or your grandmother, and perhaps you, may be carrying something that we call a BRCA gene mutation. So this is basically an abnormal gene that some women will carry which means that their risk of developing breast and ovarian cancer is significantly elevated. It would be important for your mother and or your grandmother to consider having this blood test to see if they're carrying the BRCA mutation, because if they are, then you have about a 50% chance of carrying that mutation, in which case you would be tested as well. If you, in fact, are carrying this mutation, then some additional testing prior to your surgery might make sense. So we know that since the risk of developing breast cancer is so high, it might be important for you to have a breast MRI study done prior to your surgery. So since you have a little bit of time, you can do some additional evaluation. But the genetic testing piece, I think, is extremely important. Now, we know that women like yourself, even if a breast cancer gene has not been identified, the combination of having a tibia on a needle biopsy, which you've been diagnosed with, and having a family history of breast cancer very significantly increases your risk for developing breast cancer. Hopefully, your biopsy will prove that you do not have breast cancer, but then talking with a medical oncologist about different strategies for preventing breast cancer would be extremely important.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Hannah. She says, there is a dispute on DCIS, whether it is considered to be cancer or not. I would like to get your opinion.
So that's a great question. So again, for the listeners, DCIS really means what we call ductal carcinoma in situ. So we know that the vast majority of breast cancers, about 90%, begin within the lining of the milk ducts, and the cells that line the milk duct can begin to change. They can take on an atypical appearance, and that's called atypical ductal hyperplasia, which is the situation that we just spoke about in terms of what Stella has been diagnosed with. The next step after atypical ductal hyperplasia is developing what we call ductal carcinoma in situ, which means that the cells within the milk duct have taken on a cancerous appearance. So this is cancer in that the nature of the cells within the milk duct are cancerous. But we know since the cells are contained within the milk duct, this cannot travel outside of the breast. So it can spread rather extensively within the breast and sometimes can require removal of a significant amount of breast tissue to remove all the disease, but it cannot travel elsewhere. So it is cancer in a sense that the cells have a cancerous appearance, but it doesn't act like the traditional cancers that we think about that can travel elsewhere in the body and that can kill people. The reason that we treat ductal carcinoma in situ is that we know that for many patients with this, over years, the ductal carcinoma in situ can progress to invasive breast cancer. And this is an extremely fertile area of research now because we really would like to identify specifically which patients with DCIS have a disease that can progress and which don't. So we feel that we may be overtreating many patients by wanting to eradicate all ductal carcinoma in situ, and if we knew that it was never going to really turn into invasive cancer, it wouldn't be that important to do that. So this is an important area of research which is being pursued actively. The other thing about ductal carcinoma in situ, like for invasive cancer, is that it's not one thing. There are different types of ductal carcinoma in situ, and generally we look at the grade of this, whether it's low grade or intermediate grade or high grade. The way the pathologists determine that on a needle biopsy is that the nature of the cells, how they look under the microscope. If they look barely abnormal, it's called low grade, and if they look very bizarre and abnormal, it's high grade. We know that the natural history of the low and intermediate grade and the high grade are different. The low grade likely will take many, many, many years before it could progress to invasive cancer. The high grade can progress to invasive cancer in a shorter time period. So lots of nuances to understanding ductal carcinoma in situ, but generally speaking, we consider it a localized cancer, and the treatment for it typically is localized treatment with surgery to remove the area of concern.
Thank you. That was a very clear answer. Our third question is from Eve. I was diagnosed with DCIS grade 0 to 1 of my left breast in September of 2011. Due to lack of information and insurance, I have decided to put off my mastectomy until January 2013. Will waiting a few months make any difference? I am taking estrogen blocker. I won't require any radiation or chemotherapy afterward.
Well, Eve raises a number of very, very important questions, which further amplify what we've talked about. So again, DCIS is ductal carcinoma in situ. Now, it's a little confusing because there is no grade zero DCIS, and this is sometimes where patients do get confused between what we call stage and grade. So stage relates to the prognosis of the cancer overall, and the staging of breast cancer goes from stage zero, which is, by definition, ductal carcinoma in situ, to stage one and stage two, which is early stage invasive cancer, to stage three, which is more advanced invasive cancer, and to stage four, which is actually metastatic cancer, the most advanced. So we'll be talking more about that in our next show. So in your case, you stay grade zero. There's not a grade zero, so I'm assuming that you're saying that that means stage zero. Now, grade one would be low grade. And as I just mentioned before, low grade will have a very, very long natural history and will take a long time for it to progress. So in terms of waiting to have surgery for a period of time, the implications of that are probably not very significant. It seems like that would be safe to do if, in fact, it is grade one. Now, the decision to have a mastectomy, we can talk about that a little bit. A lot of the decision-making in terms of what surgery is done for ductal carcinoma in situ really relates to the extent of the disease. If it appears to be a very large area of the breast which is involved with DCIS, then some women will opt for mastectomy, just from a practical point of view, since a lot of the breast is involved. Other women may actually prefer to have mastectomy, although it's a much bigger procedure, with modern reconstructive techniques and some of the newer mastectomy techniques, including skin-sparing and nipple-sparing mastectomy. This has become actually more popular for many patients, with the additional advantage that, as you point out, you would not need any radiation, typically after mastectomy for DCIS, whereas with a lumpectomy, often radiation is recommended. In either case, whether you had a lumpectomy or a mastectomy, for DCIS, chemotherapy would not be required. So having a mastectomy doesn't really change or reduce the likelihood for chemotherapy. In neither case is chemotherapy part of it. You imply that your tumor or your DCIS is what we call estrogen receptor positive, which means it's sensitive to estrogen in your body, and therefore an estrogen blocker that you state that you're taking will be very, very effective in treating the DCIS as well. And since you're on that medication now, putting off the surgery for a short period of time should not be dangerous. There are studies ongoing, and we hope at some point in time that we really may use medications like estrogen blockers to treat DCIS, and it may obviate the need for surgery in some patients, but the long-term studies looking at that have not yet been completed.
Okay, thank you very much. Fanny is asking the fourth question, and she says, can breast cancer be treated only through surgery? Is it possible to treat breast cancer through natural means such as dieting?
Right, so that's a good question, Fanny. So treatment for breast cancer, when we think about why do we treat breast cancer ever, I mean, I think we'll start with sort of the fundamentals here. We know that most women, when they're diagnosed with early stage breast cancer, are generally asymptomatic. Either the diagnosis is made based upon a screening study like a mammogram, in which case we recommend that a type of needle biopsy be done to decide whether there's cancer or not. We think that's very, very important as opposed to having a surgical biopsy done, because that really can influence subsequent decisions in a negative way. Or some women actually will identify a lump, or their doctor will identify a small lump in the breast. And again, a needle biopsy would be used to confirm or rule out that possible diagnosis. So we do treatment of breast cancer basically to avoid illness from breast cancer in the future. And I tell patients that all the time, that even though they've been diagnosed with breast cancer, if they're asymptomatic, they're not sick from the disease. And the whole idea of treatment is to prevent them from having illness related to breast cancer, which can occur if breast cancer gets to advanced stages and progresses to other parts of the body. So in treating breast cancer, we really divide the treatment into two different areas. One is, how do we treat the breast area specifically so the cancer is eradicated? And the other part of the treatment is really non-surgical, is the possibility of treating with medication to treat the possibility that breast cancer cells have traveled and gone elsewhere in the body. So in terms of local therapy for breast cancer, surgery is the most effective way to do this. And typically what's involved is removing the tumor completely, what we call a lumpectomy with clear margins, or a bigger operation with mastectomy. As we alluded to earlier, radiation is often recommended after lumpectomy to treat the possibility of cancer cells that have not been removed by surgery. The decision about overall treatment relates to the type of breast cancer. We talk about breast cancer like it's one disease. We've talked about ductal carcinoma in situ already. But for invasive breast cancer, there are different types. There's ductal, there's lobular. Within those, there are subtypes that we can identify by the genomics of the tumor now, which we do more and more. And that helps us to decide whether it's a breast cancer which needs a lot of treatment in terms of chemotherapy, for example, or whether it's not really so dangerous. So in terms of natural approaches to treating breast cancer, there have been no studies that really have demonstrated that natural means alone, such as dieting, you know, can really be completely effective. So traditional treatment is very important. But we certainly believe strongly that blending both traditional breast cancer treatment and complementary modalities, such as nutrition, are extremely important. And I do believe that patients who really embrace both arenas and have traditional care, but supplement that with a healthy diet, exercise, and some supplements and some mind-body approaches actually really do the best. So we think that really both approaches are really important, but surgery is a component that is really essential to treat early breast cancer.
Great. Thank you very much. Sushil is asking the next question. She says, increasingly, breast cancer management is relying on minimal surgery and radiation therapy. But radiation therapy has serious long-term fatal consequences. They often happen after 10 years when statutes of limitation have long gone. Have you ever seen any patient alive 25 or more years after breast irradiation?
Well, again, Sushil, this is a very, very interesting question. So the short answer is yes. Radiation as part of breast cancer treatment can be very, very important, but you point out some important considerations that everything we look at, and when we take care of patients, we look at risk and we look at benefit. So many years ago, radiation was in a relatively primitive state. Cobalt radiation was the standard of care, and there were studies that were done in the 40s, 50s, and 60s that women who had, for example, left-sided breast cancers and had mastectomies, who then got radiotherapy, had a markedly increased risk of developing heart disease many years later. And the reason was that the radiation that they received, the cobalt radiation, which is no longer used, actually subjected the heart to radiation and caused damage. So fast forward now, fortunately, modern radiation techniques are done in very, very high-tech fashion, where really just the breast tissue itself is treated. So the long-term effects from radiation, which really using that technique now, really we've been using for 30 or more years, really have not demonstrated major complications from radiation. The other thing that's really evolved is something called partial breast irradiation, which we've been using for the last 10 or 15 years now, where we no longer absolutely need to give radiation to the entire breast after a woman has, for example, a lumpectomy. And we can do targeted radiation where just the area of the breast where the breast cancer was is treated. There are many ways to do this, using balloon catheters, using external beam, and now we're beginning to use this actually at the time of surgery where we can give a single dose of radiation directly into the lumpectomy cavity to treat the area where the cancer was removed. So radiation in today's day and age, properly done by experienced people, certainly is safe without any worry about long-term fatal consequences.
Thank you very much. Darlene is asking the next question. She says, I actually have a two-part question. The Oncotype test, when the score is less than 10 and with an early stage 1 diagnosis, is radiation necessary?
Well, so let's clarify for the listeners. This is an important question, Darlene. So the OncoDX test is a very, very important advance. It's a way of looking at the genomic profile of certain breast cancers to get a sense of how dangerous they are and what their risk of recurrence is. It's really specifically validated for patients with certain types of breast cancer. So it's a test that's done on a portion of the tumor. And these are patients who have early stage estrogen receptor positive breast cancer without spread to their lymph nodes. The scale on this test, the results can go from 0 to 100, and a score of 10 would be considered low risk. The primary purpose of this test is to help inform the decision for the medical oncologist and for the patient as to whether or not chemotherapy is of any benefit beyond tamoxifen or hormone-blocking medication. So a low score like a 10 really does tell us for sure that there's no benefit for chemotherapy. It really cannot be used yet to help make a decision about local therapy, such as radiation after lumpectomy. So another way to understand this is that the risk of a local recurrence after breast conservation surgery like a lumpectomy is largely a function of how widely clear the margins are, or how certain we are that all the cancer has been removed. So you can have a very, very low-grade cancer, for example, even ductal carcinoma in situ, that we know biologically has very little risk for systemic disease, essentially no risk, but yet can recur locally if it's not completely excised surgically. So the OncoDX test does not allow us yet to inform decisions about local therapy, so I don't think it's really helpful in making that decision at this point about whether or not radiation is necessary. And certainly for early stage 1 breast cancer, unless a woman has a very large lumpectomy with very widely clear margins, or if she has a mastectomy, then in those situations radiation has much less benefit. But with a traditional lumpectomy with clean margins, even with a low OncoDX test like yours, like a 10, radiation still would be the standard of care.
Okay, thank you. The second part of Darlene's question is, when is the medication given for 5 years not necessary after having a lumpectomy?
Right. So this is, I think, addressing medications like tamoxifen or what we call aromatase inhibitors, which are used for postmenopausal women, which are estrogen-blocking medications. So they're used for patients who have estrogen receptor-positive breast cancers, or that, you know, their breast cancer is sensitive to estrogen in their body. We know that these medications are very, very effective in both reducing risk of local recurrence, but also reducing the risk of developing a contralateral or breast cancer in the opposite breast. And the studies that have really informed this have been very interesting to look at sequentially. So the earliest studies proving the benefit of these medications were really done in the early 70s, where patients who actually presented with metastatic or very advanced breast cancer were treated with tamoxifen, and it was proved that for estrogen receptor positive patients that the medication was incredibly effective. Then it became sort of the standard of care to use this medication for 5 years to treat women who have been treated for breast cancer already. What became obvious from that was that over a number of years, the expected incidence of developing breast cancer in the opposite breast was actually reduced by 50% in women who took tamoxifen. And that led in the late 1990s, around 1998, to a study that was completed, which actually used tamoxifen to prevent breast cancer. Women who were high risk for breast cancer were treated. It was a double-blinded, placebo-controlled study where one group of patients received tamoxifen, about 7,000 women, and 7,000 women received their placebo. And then after 5 years, the group of patients who received tamoxifen, their risk of developing a subsequent breast cancer was reduced by 50%. So to answer your question specifically, the reason that the medication is often recommended for 5 years is not always necessarily to treat the breast cancer that's already been diagnosed, but also to reduce the possibility of both a recurrence and developing a breast cancer in the other breast. So none of these decisions are absolutes, but we generally feel that if a woman can take this medication, or there are a number of different ones now, about 4 or 5 different ones which can be considered, and if they're well enough tolerated, and it reduces subsequent breast cancer risk, then it's worth doing. So for most patients, we'll decide to do that. So it's not absolutely necessary, but it's generally recommended for most patients to complete 5 years of therapy.
Great. Thank you very much. Dr. Feldman, we actually have a live caller, so we're going to turn it over to her.
Hello.
She'll be right on.
Hi, Dr. Feldman.
Hi.
This is Anne Marie Ciccarella. I am one of your Twitter followers, and I wonder if you could discuss for those that are newly diagnosed when they have options in front of them, how to go about getting all the different professionals to weigh in when they're making their decision. To be more a little bit more specific, I was faced with lumpectomy would have been okay with my surgeon. I didn't realize until I kind of stumbled upon the information on my own that should I develop a second breast cancer or a recurrence of the original breast cancer, and I was dealing with radiated skin, the reconstruction issues might arise. And I think that many women don't realize that when they're making their decision, and for me, reconstruction would have been, I would have been devastated if I could not have reconstruction because of radiated skin. And I know that there are women presently that I'm friendly with that are having that issue. And I'm concerned that that information is not out there where they're speaking to a breast surgeon and then not going further to a radiation oncologist to say, well, what's going to happen? And then even a plastics guy to come in and have the whole full picture before they're making a life-altering change.
Right. No, I think it's a great, great question. I think the key, there is a lot of good information available. Certainly there are great websites, there are books, but I think the key is to try to assure that in the initial evaluation that if you're meeting with a breast surgeon first, which is often the case, that there is a multidisciplinary team that's involved in the care. And there are many different ways to do that. There are some centers where you'll meet with actually the surgeon, the medical oncologist, radiation oncologist, plastic surgeon as part of a comprehensive consultation. It's complex to do that. It's not always possible unless it's a complicated situation. Other centers, for example, there is a multidisciplinary tumor board where every newly diagnosed patient is discussed every week by the whole team, and there should be a follow-up discussion with the patient after that meeting so that all the nuances of care can be well understood. I think it generally is important for patients to have more than one opinion when they're newly diagnosed. Some situations are very straightforward. If you see 10 people, there'll be 10, everyone will agree. But there can be slight differences, the interpretation. Certainly in terms of breast conservation, you know, the safety of breast conservation, the philosophy of the program and of the treating physicians towards that are all incredibly important. You know, we have patients, for example, present with extensive disease who now we treat very frequently with medication before surgery, either chemotherapy or hormone-blocking medicine to shrink the tumor if a woman really is, if breast conservation is important for her. The issue about radiation and reconstruction, I think that there is not great data about that out there for anybody, and there are a lot of misconceptions. Generally speaking, you know, the advantage, as you know, of radiation is that it greatly reduces the risk of a recurrence. It is true that if someone develops a recurrence, it may be more difficult to be reconstructed, but there are newer protocols now. For example, we treat many patients who have locally recurrent breast cancer many years after lumpectomy with radiation with another lumpectomy with a newer type of radiation. Some of these patients who decide to have a mastectomy and reconstruction using their own natural tissue to do the reconstruction still allows them to have a very, very favorable type of reconstruction done even after prior radiation. So, you know, it's a complicated question. There are nuances to it. But I'd say the bottom line is certainly to be evaluated initially at a center that really has a multidisciplinary team. And, you know, as you've done, and I think as many navigators now and patient advocates help patients newly diagnosed to make sure that they come to their meeting with a list of all the questions that need to be asked, and really be proactive about making sure you get all the answers up front.
Thank you very much. That is the list of questions is, seems to be the very important part of that. And women, I think that we somehow need to get a list out there that, you know, anybody can quickly access, so that they, because that runaway train, when you hear those words, you just tend to be like, get it out and let me move on from this. So.
No, you're absolutely right. One of my jobs always, when I see a new patient who's been diagnosed, is to try to slow things down a little bit. Because although it's psychologically, emotionally urgent, it's most important that patients really make good decisions with proper information. And the worst thing, as I think you're alluding to, is sometimes patients will make decisions with incomplete information, and those decisions lead to loss of options down the road. And I think everybody feels that that's pretty painful when that happens.
Absolutely. That captures it very well, that I would not have been able to do with my chemo brain. It would have taken me 100 words to get that out. Yes, that is what happens. I think it's knee-jerk, and the first thing I would always say to somebody is just breathe. Breathe for a bit and let it settle in, and then start to gather your information, and then the answers will come to you. So, but thank you so much for elaborating in such great detail.
Great. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Dr. Feldman, do you have time for one more question?
Sure.
Okay, great. Lori asks, I need a clarification. Last May 2011, I had a mammogram and was sent a letter that no cancer was detected. This was not a digital mammogram. Unbeknownst to me, the letter that went to the requesting doctor stated that a well-defined mass, 20 millimeters, was seen in the left breast with no microcalcifications. In 2009, I had had a core biopsy of calcifications and a cyst drained in my right breast. No cancer was found. This June, I have a 4 to 5 centimeter mass in my left breast in the same place as the 20 millimeter mass last year. This time on digital mammography, the left breast is riddled with microcalcifications. What happened? I am still waiting for my core biopsy results. No one thinks it's cancer. No one thinks it isn't cancer.
Right. So, Lori, thank you for your question. So just a couple of comments I'd like to make before answering. So you raised the issue about digital mammography, and certainly we think that digital mammography now is the standard of care. Studies comparing digital with analog mammography have been completed, and certainly for younger patients, patients with dense breast tissue, the image quality of the digital mammograms is better. Now, it is possible that sometimes identifying very faint calcifications is more difficult with non-digital than with digital mammography. And we do see many patients who have yearly analog mammograms, and then when they have their first digital mammogram, calcifications are seen. And the question really is, are these actually new calcifications, or have they been there all along, and we just have a more sensitive imaging modality, the digital study, which is demonstrating them? So it's hard to interpret the first non-analog or digital mammogram, because there may be things that have been there for a long time which are now just being seen. In terms of, so you've had a, it sounds like you've had a benign needle biopsy of your right breast back in 2009, and a cyst that was drained. And then you, in May of 2011, there was a benign appearing. When they say well-defined mass, typically that characterizes a benign mass. That was 20 millimeters. So, of course, the question there would be, was this a new mass compared to the mammogram that you had back in 2009? If it was, then generally speaking, even a benign appearing new mass would typically be biopsied. And the appropriate way to biopsy would be with a needle biopsy, either a stereotactic biopsy, which means using the mammographic image to do the biopsy, or an ultrasound-guided biopsy if this is well seen on ultrasound. So we fast forward now to early June, and you're stating now that this mass has gotten significantly larger on the left side. Again, of course, that's of concern. There's something there that's grown. Now, not all masses that get bigger are cancerous. There are benign lumps that do get bigger. But again, I think as you've had done now, having a needle biopsy of that area performed to basically assess the nature of it is important. And I would venture to say that hopefully this is not cancer, but even if it is a benign lump, most likely we would recommend surgical excision because this is clearly grown, has shown a tendency to grow, and likely will continue to grow. So it sounds like you're going to have to contemplate surgery for this. In terms of the additional findings, as you described, riddled with microcalcifications, the decision to biopsy microcalcifications is really mainly based upon the morphology or the shape and structure of the microcalcifications. Generally, diffuse microcalcifications, if they're not of many different shapes, can be a normal finding and can develop with time. But if there are clusters of what we call pleomorphic, meaning many different shaped calcifications, those should be biopsied as well so that the nature of the calcifications can be better understood. So I hope that helps you with some of the some of your questions, and I certainly do hope that your biopsy comes back being benign.
Thank you very much, Dr. Feldman. So it is time for us to close our Blog Talk Radio show. I want to remind you that we have our next discussion on September 5th, and it's going to cover what you need to know when you're diagnosed with advanced stage breast cancer. Dr. Feldman, I'd like to thank you again for your time, and also for our listeners, if you have submitted questions that we did not have time to answer on this show, we will be answering your questions by email. If you have any other questions about the show or want us to cover other topics, please feel free to email us, and we would be happy to consider all suggestions. If you'd like more information from the Columbia Clinical Breast Cancer Program, please visit our website, www.breastmd.org, and to contact Dr. Feldman's office directly by telephone, please call 212-305-9676. Again, this is Deborah Schwarz, and thank you very much for tuning in to What You Need to Know If You Are Diagnosed with Early Stage Breast Cancer. Have a very healthy day. Thank you.